The craft coffee business is filled with deeply passionate fans, but the economics have made it hard for independent coffee shops to survive in this highly competitive world. Labor challenges, supply chain issues, and high rents have made it hard to survive without scale. I wanted to get more insight on the current state of the coffee market, so I had Mouyed Abdulhadi, CEO and co-founder of Pax & Beneficia Coffee and the founder of Barista GPT, to learn more.
You feel allowed to sit the dance floor. Don't work too hard, my break a backbone. Return to the back, the king is back though. Cover in the cash, I never lack those. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all got the semi-fold way. Don't step out the line like this a probate. You hit the line and tried to locate. This for the time, got time for no day. Woo boy.
Welcome to another edition of the Kronos Podcast. It's a coffee day, which is super exciting for me. I am joined by Mouyed Abdulhadi, CEO and co-founder of Pax & Beneficia Coffee and founder of Barista GPT. Thank you for joining me. How are you doing today?
Good, man. Thank you for having me. It was exciting.
Of course. My pleasure. So I am just a massive fan of coffee and the craft coffee scene. And I have very vocally not a big coffee shop kind of guy. And so when I found you, I was really excited to talk to you because I've been really interested in the overall state of the coffee business. Mm-hmm. And before we get into that, into the details, take a little bit, tell the audience your background, how you got into this, and ultimately what drew you to this business.
Yeah, so my background is digital marketing. And out of school, I mean, I was a biology major out of school, didn't know what to do with it. Learn marketing. So started working my way up from agency, client side, and just working my way through the corporate ladder. But in the background, coffee was always there, right, through college and even after. Started developing it more as a hobby. And then it became more than a hobby. It's like, okay, when you visit any place in the world, what are the cool coffee shops to go to? Because in my view, that's kind of how you get a sense of an area, of a city. You go visit the coffee shops, so whether it's high end or low end or in hipster areas or whatever, you see where people are drinking coffee and hanging out. So just early on, it became kind of in the back of my mind, okay, I'd love to open a coffee shop one day, right? And then I met my partner, Mamdur, through mutual friends. We went on a trip together and we went to Sweden and Norway, and those are incredible coffee countries, arguably ahead of ours here, but the way they do their coffee is incredible. And just as a part of the itinerary, a bunch of coffee shops, obviously. And then on that train ride from Stockholm to Oslo, and this is a marketing story on the website, and I love telling it because it's 100% true. It's not just a marketing story. We just started talking like, yeah, I'd love to open a coffee shop. And he also comes from a similar background. He's like, yeah, I've always wanted to do that. He's a physician by trade, right? So completely different for both of us, right? Yeah, I'm background marketing business. He's a physician and a registered radiologist. We start talking about the concepts and what we do. And we're like, yeah, this is really cool. And our wives were with us. I think they were just looking at us like we're crazy. Like, what are these guys nerding out about? Sure. And it was overnight train. We fell asleep. And he taps me on the shoulder and says, hey, I got the name for the coffee shop. I said, okay, fine, what is it? He says, Pax & Beneficia. It means peace and blessings. I was like, sounds perfect. Can I go back to sleep? So went back to sleep. And then that's kind of the rest of it. And then that was kind of April 2018. And through the rest of the year, anywhere we'd both be, we'd just send each other kind of coffee shop pictures and menus and, oh, this is cool. I like how they did this, and just get inspiration. And then found the location, our first location in Irving, had family visit. I was like, okay, this could be a great spot for it. Called him up and I said, I found a great location. You actually ready to do this? And he said yes, and the rest is history. And then from there, we made so many mistakes, as a lot of people do when they're opening a business or any entrepreneurship venture, right? So it was a lot of learned by fire and building it out and all the decisions and basically a design build at the time. And early on, and then COVID hits, right? Like we literally opened August 2019, and then 6 months later COVID hits, right? So that was just a wild two and a half years. But early on, we decided, okay, we had to make a decision. Do we want to stay in one coffee shop or do we want to become a coffee company, right? And the decision was easy. We're like, well, no, we want to, this could be a really big brand. And from there, we just started getting more opportunities, opened our second one. And then we knew the next one after that, we'd want to roast our own. Mm. And our third one, we had a roastery, and it's kind of our flagship where I'm sitting now. And then now we're at five locations. So five locations in 4 years. This is our fifth year in business. Again, made a lot of mistakes, learned a lot, but I think we're just scratching the surface on the company. So yeah, that's kind of the Pax and Beneficia coffee background.
Yeah,
and yeah, wherever you want to go from there.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of places. I want to start with, and we're gonna tease your newer venture. That's a really interesting mm-hmm. piece of this as well. And leveraging technology to be able to help independent brands grow. But I want to take a step back and talk high level just about the current landscape of the independent
sure.
coffee business. So obviously it's weird how, you know, even when Starbucks got started, it was still the same thing, right? You had the big brands
yep.
that were dominating a lot of the areas. Nobody's ever done it like they did, but it was always that, because coffee is a very emotional thing, and it's mm-hmm. the coffee fanatics are very passionate about their coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw obviously through COVID, we're in a different situation now, but independent, no matter what it is, whether it's restaurants, whether it's coffee shops, mm-hmm. most businesses like this they have a lot of challenges, right? Labor, things like that, mm-hmm. supply chain. Talk to us a little bit about how you see just the landscape of the independent coffee business right now.
Yeah, so it's very funny, like here in Dallas especially. So I think we started we opened Pax at the end of what is traditionally known as the third wave of coffee, where it became a lot more specialty. And I think the Starbucks of the world paved the way for the third space and what we could become here. And then from there, the coffee industry kind of changed. So becoming more, like to your point, independent, specialty coffee shops, local, high grade, high scoring coffees in the area. And then you can see kind of the roaster going back and forth, getting the coffees. But for here in Dallas, when we opened in August 2019, the Dallas market was still very, very fresh. There was only a handful of specialty coffee shops in the area, in the city. And you remember this, you're from here. I think it was like there was only like a handful of roasters. It was kind of just still a burgeoning scene.
Right.
And then in the 5 years since, not only have a lot of big companies emerged, now you have independent coffee shops almost in every in every area, which is fantastic. But what I think is gonna happen eventually is I see it happen two ways, right? Like, I think one, people think coffee is a very high margin business, and it's not, right? Like, in restaurants in general, like if you're making 15 to 20%, like you're killing it.
Yeah.
And if you're in higher end areas and higher occupancy and higher labor, to your point earlier, then that was also obviously kind of know your margins. But what I foresee happening is a lot of these independent coffee shops are either going to be bought out. They're gonna shift into something else, or they're gonna kind of come together and have kind of a co-op collaborative environment. Just because as a coffee shop, let's say an individual coffee shop, you're not, unless you're behind the bar managing the cafe 7 a.m. to 5, 7 p.m., you're going to have to pay a manager. You're going to have to pay baristas. Mm-hmm. It's crunching your margins, mm-hmm. which is kind of like the E-Myth Revisited type stuff, right? Like you start getting into your own way. And then ultimately, I think everyone has to come to that decision. Do you want to be a coffee shop or a coffee company, right? And if people are comfortable having that coffee, being that coffee shop and working it and making it a thing that's admirable and respectful. But I think that's kind of the direction that people are going to have to go, is either go like combine forces and grow, or sell and get out, or keep growing, right? So that's kind of the one side of the industry, which is a good and bad thing. I mean, it's good because especially coffee is everywhere. People should be drinking better coffee. It's a bad thing because you hate to see people do this kind of stuff, and then it's tougher, right? Like, I'm not even saying from a competitive perspective. I mean, DFW is a huge market. There's plenty of market share to go around. People moving here every single day. Yeah. It's more of like, you just hate to see small businesses dying,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Especially when it's a commoditized product like coffee that was already commoditized. It's further commoditized. That is just like, how do you differentiate your brand?
Yeah.
And then the other industry trends that are going to affect everybody, from people like us, like we're like 5 locations, to the people that are 14, 15, 20 locations, to the Starbucks of the world, is further automation, further technology implementation that I wouldn't say will eliminate the specialty coffee feel. It will kind of change the dynamics, right? Like, for example, at PAX, we have, I mean, we'll talk about it, I think, more here later, but like, we have the AI ordering, we have the kiosks. We even have, and a lot of people are worried about this and think this isn't specialty, but we've actually installed super automatic Eversys espresso machines that just, and the coffee and the milk taste just as good as it does from a manual La Marzocco Strata and a manual grinder, right? So, but that's all stuff to help improve workflows and help with COGS, help with labor and stuff. While for us, at least, it still kind of supports that specialty coffee atmosphere, right? Like, for even like when we launched all that stuff, we said clearly that it's not meant to replace anybody, not meant to cut labor. It's meant to give people, both customers who want to order, an easier way to order, another option. Maybe you don't want to talk to a barista. And also for the baristas, this is going to improve your workflow, so you get drinks out faster, also improving the guest experience while not sacrificing quality. And in fact, it gives you more opportunity to interact and engage with the customer to help grow that hospitality field that we want, right?
Which makes sense. I'm a black coffee guy, and for people like me, you know, I don't, there's no reason to take a trained barista's time to make a black coffee for me. And so we automate that. Makes all the sense.
Yeah, exactly. 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 And that, those are kind of things I think everyone was going to have to figure out how to live with, especially, I mean, honestly, with increased labor costs, increased COGS, inflation is real, right? So all of this cuts into your margins. So you have to kind of make these tough decisions as a business owner, is, okay, which direction is my company going to take? And for us, we're on the 100% technology adoption side of things, right? Like, again, it's not meant to be a replacement. It's not meant to be a deterrent. It's meant to enhance what we're serving. And if we can serve our guests better, faster, easier, without sacrificing quality, then we've hit it. I think those are kind of like the big industry things that I always think about. I mean, you have other things coming, like climate change will obviously impact coffee production and coffee costs, right? So keeping a pulse on that, expanding coffee regions and what they're offering, have to keep a hold of that. And then as we enter now, what's industry known as the kind of getting into the fourth wave, is how do you position yourself in the market, right? Whereas in third wave, you could really, really focus just on the coffee and you'd do well, right? But now the customers and guests generally want more of an experience, but that experience isn't just with the coffee. That's right. Like, even non-coffee drinkers, like, matcha's killing it across the entire world. Like, everybody wants matcha now. Refreshers and coffee alternatives and caffeine alternatives, that kind of stuff is going crazy, right? So for us at Pax Mephistia, it's like, okay, how do we adopt some of these things, again, without sacrificing who we are, but just make it as part of our ethos? And then ultimately for us, adding food, right? This Q1, we added a lot more food items to the menu, right? To give people sitting an opportunity to get a snack, sandwiches, and then how do you present it more and elevate it? So those are all things that the industry is going to, and you have to adapt and evolve, or you're going to be left behind.
Yeah. It's always so tough, because I think a lot of people, there's a lot of, when a new coffee shop opens up, a lot of excitement. People are happy to support local coffee shops, you know, instead of going to one of the big brands. But then you mentioned it in a couple different ways, is what are the economics for a one-off coffee shop, right? And how do they actually sustain their model, which is really, really difficult. You mentioned coffee is not as high margin of a business as people think that it is, especially doing the way you guys do it. Sure, if you're just pouring from a, you know, a carafe or something and grab and go coffee, maybe, but how do you guys, because you mentioned food, you mentioned matcha, you mentioned these refreshers, a lot of that seems to fall into the really, really difficult decisions that business owners have to make is, are we adding more SKUs that get us further away from our core competency? And then how does that affect, like you mentioned, those workflows? How does that affect, are we taking our eye off the ball and doing something that we're not really trained to do? And so walk us through that decision-making process, right? Adding food, which is an entirely different, you know, set of and some of these other things. Walk us through, you know, how you guys evaluated that decision, what led to you guys doing it, and then, you know, what does that look like moving forward?
So that's actually a very interesting one, and I'll walk you through from the beginning. So when we first started, funny enough, me and Mamdouh, my partner, we said, we are not going to do food. We're just a coffee and pastry company, right? And then literally 6 months later, and it's funny enough, we actually launched the, so you remember when like the whole world shut down, like it was that Denver Nuggets game and the night before and literally the next day, the whole world shut down.
Yep.
That, so that Sunday before, that was a Tuesday, if I remember correctly, that Sunday before we finalized all our toast options and we said, we're launching toasts. So we launched it that week, right? Which in hindsight was actually like, it was good that COVID hit because it allowed us to really kind of reset, but that's a different conversation.
Yeah.
So we're like, so we went from not doing any food to, okay, let's start with toasts. And the reason we did that was, again, we started seeing a lot more coffee shops doing toasts. Mm-hmm. And we looked at our menus that, okay, is there a way we could fit this without sacrificing? Can we, two questions. Can we do this where we're not sacrificing quality, where it adds revenue, and where we could do it in a way that it fits our brand? Right, the Pax and Benefici way. And the answers to all of them were yes. And it took us a while to develop those toasts, right? So our avocado toast, everybody has avocado toast, but what was our unique spin on it? It was more of a Mediterranean look and feel. We did a ricotta toast that has this, like our own special blend of adding ricotta and stuff. So all that to say, well, we had to make the decision because we needed to increase sales and we needed to do it in a way that was still tasteful and fits our brand. So that was 2020, and then fast forward to 2023. It was, okay, now it was different discussions. Well, in those 3 years, the industry also changed, right? A lot more cafes from like Australian influence, where Australian influence is more, not just coffee, but it's like when you go to a coffee shop, even a specialty coffee, it's coffee and food. Like Proud Mary's out of Austin does this really, really well. And then you have other kind of people doing that, like a Foxtrot, they have sandwiches. And so it just became kind of more of an expectation of like, you can't just serve coffee and pastries and toast. You are, if you're getting into the third wave and giving more people that want different things, then you have to give them something to be able to order. So, but from the business side, it's like, okay, what are we actually launching? And it was the same kind of conversation. Can we do it tastefully? Can we do it where it doesn't impact the workflows and doesn't overburden the baristas? Can we do it in a way that it fits the Pax and Benevicia brand? So we hired a chef, actually, local. Her name is Chef Gigi Zimmerman. Shout out, Chef Gigi. I met her through a friend, reached out to her and said, took her to our Las Clinas location because that one's kind of one that, like the back of the house was kind of the smallest one. I said, okay, here's the space we have. How do we build a food menu? We can add maybe one or two more pieces of equipment without being a full kitchen. So she developed a fantastic menu, like with egg sandwiches and salads and salmon bagels and even a hummus plate, a fruit and cheese plate, right? That all are things that we already have sandwich prep. We already have the fridge space. We literally added two more pieces of equipment, a countertop convection oven and a panini press. And we were able to launch a food menu, right? So the rollout was difficult. We rolled out one cafe at a time, a lot of trial and error, a lot of training. But our food sales went from 9% to 15% across the board.
Wow.
Well, that's a big jump, right? When you're going from a $7, $8, $9 toast to a $12 bagel, right? Salmon bagel, right? And then now it's like, okay, we've perfected it. Now what else can we do? So we actually have another food expert coming in and elevating the existing menu, right? So now we can still offer those awesome savory and sweet food options for breakfast, lunch, or even an afternoon snack, late afternoon snack, while also still focusing on the coffee. And we've even evolved ourselves as a company. We've, like, our Grapevine location is now more of a commissary, right? We've taken out the prep work from the cafes, doing it more a commissary here, which allows us to do a lot more and not relying on prep. So we've kind of found that balance now, but the business decisions were still, does this fit our brand? Can we do this in a way that doesn't impact workflow? And does it increase revenue while controlling costs? And the answer when all of them are yes. And there were some dishes and some things that we'd have and be like, no, that's still too hard, or we need this equipment, or we need, and it was like, okay, X that out. We're not going to add that. So I think you have to, I mean, from my chair, I'm just personally, just as an entrepreneur, I'm more of the go, 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 like MVP, launch it, figure it out as you go type. Whereas, thankfully I have, like, our director of ops, he's always a devil's advocate, right? He's like, what about this? And it kind of is a good, and my partner also, he's a physician, obviously. So a scientist by trade. Right. So he's always thinking about, okay, what are the, so it's a good balance of people, and somebody in my chair, I have to have those people around me to keep me kind of grounded.
Yeah.
And I have to be honest with myself and understand that there, like, it's all positive intent. It's not, nobody is impeding progress. It's like, can we do this in a way that,
yeah.
And another example, this is actually something that we haven't done. I had a lead on really affordable soft serve machines, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the Texas heat is crazy. So having soft serve would be really, really cool. I said it to my director of ops. He's like, this is cool. Love to do it if we could do it the PAX way. And I was like, spot on.
Yeah.
Right. Like, it's,
yeah.
If we can't do it the PAX way, then what's the point of having soft serve? Right.
Yeah.
We're not a McDonald's. and those are the kind of discussions we have to have.
Yeah. And you mentioned a couple things at the beginning here, the fact that you guys are roasting your own. You mentioned moving to more of a commissary model, which the most effective way, it seems like, has been proven time and time again, is the more economies of scale you can get, the better, and that centralization really helps. Talk to us about what goes into the decision to start roasting your own coffee for those that and also take some time to talk to some of the listeners that may not know and understand, you know, what are the pros and cons of that, right? Because you are a lot more responsibility on your plate to be able to do that versus just a ready-made product delivered. So talk to us about what went into that. What stage you guys chose to do that? How many locations did you have open at that time? And mm-hmm. what did that allow you to do for the brand moving forward?
Yeah, so it came back to the earlier decision, which was, do we want to be a coffee shop or a coffee company, right? And to be known as a coffee company, I think you have to just roast your own coffee. Like, you have to have your own, you can white label, you can find other things, but there is a difference when you could say, we source this green coffee and we're roasting it our way, right? And there is a brand elevation that comes with it. Before that, we were Merit was our wholesale, Merit Coffee out of San Antonio, and they have location in Dallas, was our wholesale partner. Fantastic. So when we opened our third location, we said, okay, this is probably time to start roasting our own coffee, because we were seeing the amount of coffee we were ordering every week. We're like, okay, we did some back of the napkin math. Does it make more economic sense for us to roast our own coffee? For us, and I'll talk about us, I think that for us, we've had a tendency to put the cart before the horse, right? So we always tend to build the infrastructure and then grow into it, which is an interesting mm-hmm. problem. And using specific examples, like, we built the roastery, and our roaster was a fantastic roaster. He knows how to roast coffees better, as good as any great roaster in the country, but he never ran a roastery, right? So from an economic business perspective, we were learning together on how to actually run a roastery profitably. And a specific example is that when we launched, we had like 7 or 8 coffees on as options when we probably should have started probably 4. Mm-hmm. Well, how does that affect things? Well, just from having green coffee in your storage and in your warehouse, you're having to release those pallets. That's extra inventory that you're having to manage, right? And those inventory costs are pretty high, right? So stuff like that, you just kind of learn. But now we're at 5 locations. It's making all the sense to roast our own coffee, right? Even when you factor in the roaster salary, the cost of the green, the cost of the bags, even delivery van costs, right? It just makes economic. Even if it's breaking even, we're not spending extra on roasting our own coffee. Right. So for others, I would say either. One, start roasting right away, but doing it in a very, very small, methodical way. And don't go hire a roaster and build out a facility and try to grow into it. Like, start doing it in a very, very sustainable, small way and then grow versus how we did it. And then ultimately, I think even if you run one coffee shop, you can start roasting, but you're going to be roasting for a few hours every week because you're not doing the volume unless you're a really busy coffee shop, which there are some of those. There's a lot of those all over the country. But as you add more locations and build out wholesale and build out retail and direct and D2C, then it becomes a lot more. It makes a lot more sense to start roasting around.
Yeah. You mentioned the DTC piece, and you guys sell yours direct to consumers as well. You sell it online. I'm sure you buy it in the location as well. Mm-hmm. How have buyers' preferences changed? I think people, there's always the old, the boomer move of, these kids would stop going out and spending so much money on coffee and make it at home.
Yep.
They'd be able to buy a house. And you mentioned the avocado toast as well, and man, you guys are killing the
drink. Yeah, that's a big one.
But so how have preferences changed, both in what are they looking for in the store? You mentioned looking for more matcha and refreshers, things like that, but how has preferences changed on making coffee at home? Are you guys seeing more people shifting to buying in bulk and making it at home? What does that look like?
Yeah, I would say it's a growing thing for us. Like, we're not at a level of like a Blue Bottle or Onyx or Intelligentsia, these big companies that are doing a lot of D2C yet. But that is something we're investing heavily in this year. But from a retail perspective, and it's funny, like when we launched e-commerce last year, we told our teams in the stores, like, hey, start pushing e-commerce, like they can subscribe and just to grow that part of the business. And funny enough for us, people would tell our baristas, yeah, I know I could buy it online. I just like coming into the store and buying coffee, mm-hmm. right? Which is normally equivalent to buying the bag and buying a drink,
right?
Which for us is like, oh, that's fantastic. So I think the trend has continued going up. I think people are enjoying making their own coffee at home more. There's an entire world of home baristas right now where 5 to 10 years ago, I think it was still coming up. But now, literally, I think most of my friend group, and they're not really even coffee drinkers. They have a Breville espresso machine at their house. Mm-hmm. People are making pour overs and Chemexes, and they're looking at these things. And it's become kind of almost a status symbol to say that you are a specialty coffee drinker and you make your own coffee and you could do latte art and you could dial espresso and you like these beans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, we like everyone's on TikTok and Instagram and you see like the constant flow of people just making coffee at home. So it's a good thing. Like it's a great thing, right? Again, I come back to what I said earlier is like, I'm glad people are drinking better coffee, right? Like there's no reason, and it's not that much more expensive, right? But there's no reason for you to be stuck with Folgers all your life, right? Or Keurig cups or whatever, which, I mean, obviously they have their markets, but You know what? You can, like, I tweeted this the other day, is like, you can change your life with a $100 investment just in a hand grinder, a V, Hario V60, and filters, and just go to your local roaster and buy a bag of coffee, and your morning will change because you could taste the difference in the coffee. So I think people are getting to that, and that forces us as a coffee company to continue iterating, to continue seeing what better coffees are out there, how to roast the right way, how to source the right way, to make sure it's appealable to everyone as well.
Yeah. And you mentioned a couple times, you know, doing it the PAX way and the brand that you have. And so what are you guys seeing? Let me ask it this way. From when you guys started, you know, on the train, and when you guys really got started late in 2019 to now, how do you guys approach, you know, constantly thinking about what your brand is and outreach and staying true to that brand? Talk to us a little bit about how you developed it, and then how are you continuing to get that brand out there?
Yeah, so that's a very good question, because we're still kind of going through multiple, like, we're going through a rebrand right now. So when we first started, we knew we wanted to be a modern coffee shop with influences from different parts of the world, specifically Andalusia in Spain, Turkey, the Middle East, and even Scandinavian, right? So right off the bat, we weren't overtly cultural ethnic coffee company, right? The reason I say it, because we wanted to be a modern coffee shop, we wanted to appeal to everyone, but we wanted to infuse some of our own culture and background and experiences into it, right? In summary, we wanted to build a coffee shop that we'd go to, right? Like, for us, and it, I guess other people love it too, which has turned out great. But then, as the market has changed, like, there's a lot more competition, obviously. But I always say competition, again, market share is everything, but like, there's plenty of market share to go around. But it's like, there's a lot of other opportunities in that very specific cultural side of things, right? Like, for example, here in Dallas, there's been a proliferation of Yemeni coffee shops, right? And I love those coffee shops. I love what they're doing. They're supporting the coffee farmers back in Yemen, war-torn refugee. Like, it's just crazy what's happening there. And these coffee shops are importing the coffee from their homeland and putting together a menu that really, really depicts Yemeni culture. Well, that's fantastic. But for us, as a company that's kind of started on that cultural side, we've kind of, okay, when people are going that way, let's kind of position and differentiate ourselves the other way, right? So we're still kind of that modern coffee shop, with influences from different parts of the world. For example, this past year, our director of ops, he's Mexican origin, and he put together a fantastic café de olla type syrup. And we have like horchata, so we're able to infuse some Mexican culture in our drinks. We had a Spanish bombón last year, and now we have a Spanish latte, right? So from Spain, we have Turkish coffee on our menu, right? So it's we're still that modern coffee shop, but we've infused some of these flavors and experiences from other parts of the world without being overt and in your face. And now, as we move forward in our rebrand, the same elements are the same, right? Like, at our core, Pax and Beneficia means peace and blessings. We strive to be a source of both for the communities and people that well, communities we're in, and the people that come through our door, whether it's team members and guests. And we really believe in what we call the honored guest experience, right? So if we look at everything through that lens, then we make decisions based on those things, right? Like, from, okay, if our locations need new furniture, is it more seating for, does it further that honored guest experience, or does it take away from it? Does adding a new menu item further that guest experience, or does it take away from it? And we try to, like, even we just redid our website completely to focus more on D2C and e-commerce and kind of showcase our coffee as well. That should help the people that are buying online. And then, if you want to learn more about locations, you still can, right? So all of this rebrand is a part of continuing on that trend of, okay, continuing to grow the brand as we add more locations, as we grow D2C, as we build that brand out. And we were just at SCA in Chicago, so we went five people, and we met a lot of vendors and fellow coffee professionals. So as our name grows, continuing to be a place that is both peace of blessings and an honored guest experience for everyone.
Yeah, it's impressed that just after 4 or 5 years already having to think about, you know, a rebrand and moving forward because you're a different company now, especially with a couple weird years there at the beginning that you know, we've all kind of lost track of. Before we get going, and we could just talk about this all day long, but I wanted to hit on, you mentioned technology and automation a couple times here. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about Barista GPT and what led you to developing that, what problems is it solving. So talk to us about that just from creation to now and what the future looks like for it.
Yeah, so again, my background is digital marketing. Always been like in the startup tech world, even though now I'm in coffee, right? But it's always kind of how I started my career. Like even before like all of this, like I had an app developed and I sold it and all this stuff. So small scale, but still. So when OpenAI released GPT 3.5, I think it was 3.5 at the time. This was October 22. Yeah, October 22, around that time, right? I think everyone went on there was like, oh my God, like this is incredible. Like, my kind of light bulb moment happened. So I was in actually Colombia with a friends of mine, and they were getting ready, and I was waiting for them. And I was on Twitter, and I saw a thread about a guy that said, "Yeah, I just created a Chrome extension just by asking ChatGPT questions." Mm. I was like, "Interesting. Let me see if I can do that." And I kid you not, within 45 minutes, I had a working Chrome extension installed on my laptop, where I could put in a zip code and it gave me a list of coffee shops in the area organized by reviews, right? So I'm not a coder, right? Like I know very basic HTML and CSS. I was just asking ChatGPT, how would I build this? What's the code look like? And then copying and pasting it in a code editor and asking it how to deploy it. So I was like, that was my like, oh my God, like my mind blown, like the world just changed. So everything just changed. If I could build a Chrome extension with no coding expertise, then imagine what else you can do. So from there, I started thinking, I was like, okay, how can I apply it to anything just to see what we can build? And naturally, the first thing is the coffee company is like, how can we apply it here? And initially, Barista GPT was just going to be a Q&A type customer service. What are your hours? What's your menu? What are some drink options? Do you have non-dairy alternatives? Mm-hmm. Stuff like that. And I said, okay, wait a minute. For it to actually be a good platform, you need to actually add ordering. So then we're like, okay. So old developer friend of mine reached out to him. I said, hey, you want to build this with me? I had already built kind of a very, very basic working demo. Mm-hmm. I basically like uploaded our entire menu and I started asking questions about the menu. And I was like, okay, this is really cool. Talked to him and we built a working prototype. And then for the next 6 months, just kept on improving it, improving the model, improving the prompting until we could get it to a place that was about 90% accurate. And then we launched. So it's meant to be another ordering avenue, right? So you have your kiosks, you have your in-person, you have your phone. This is another opportunity to capture. And for people that need to ask a lot of questions, this is a great opportunity for them. So what it does for the cafe, right? Like we talked about kind of labor costs and improving customer flows. That's one angle. But then as we're kind of still working on this platform, the growth is going to be in the two areas. One, it's going to eventually, I think, be a loyalty play, right? Using AI to further solidify customer retention. For example, like we added a feature that said, hey, do you want to save your order? So now next time you log in, it says, welcome back. Do you want your usual today?
Right.
Just like as if you're interacting with a barista, right? So that kind of stuff. And then the other side of it is like, where can we add stuff that makes it applicable to other restaurants and industries, right? And I'll use two specific examples, like mom and pop pizza shops and or like a burger joint, right? Like they get calls probably all day. Mm-hmm. Like sure, people can order online, go in order, but they probably get calls. Like imagine how many missed opportunities and missed revenue there is by just not answering your phone because you're so busy, right? Especially like family-owned small restaurants, right? So that solves that for them because you could do Barista GPT through the phone. You could do it through the web interface. But then what other ordering platforms are there? And this is actually one that came up recently was there's a lot of these, I'm sure you've seen them, these like warehouses popping up that do discount clearance type of where they get returned goods from Amazon and they sell at a discount, right? Imagine all that inventory on a Barista GPT-like platform that you can order with, right? Instead of having to ask, right? And then you could add other channels. So all that to say, our mission went from being an ordering platform for coffee shops to making ordering as seamless as possible through as many channels as possible, which is easily done through LLMs and ChatGPT.
That's extremely exciting. I remember when I first saw Barista GPT, it definitely light bulb went off in my head. I was like, oh man, this is very much needed for any, I mean, and you mentioned it in a couple different ways, but ultimately if you're an independent coffee shop, you're a one-off, or maybe, you know, two locations, if you're not embracing technology and automation wherever you can, it's just too difficult to succeed. And so it's always great, I'm sure, for them being able to have something created by somebody that truly understands what their situation is and has walked in their shoes and is giving an opportunity to solve a specific challenge, not just, hey, here's something that somebody else created off the rack. Yep. You have to try and fit in. It was created with that DNA in mind.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, and then like right now it's just, okay, so the platform, I say the V1 of the platform is up and running. We're still growing it, trying to add new features, self-service type stuff. And then it's finding more of these different industries to be customer zero and say, hey, help us build what you need us to build, right? And keep growing it, right? And who knows what this might be. And for me, like I do this stuff and honestly, like if it becomes a unicorn, great, multi-million dollar revenue, great. If it just another notch on the belt of something cool that we did, also great, right? Like it's not... like there's that sense of satisfaction. Like, you know what? You can keep launching cool stuff, right? And keep opening and doing cool things that help people and help grow businesses.
Definitely. Well, you've been very generous with your time. I appreciate it. Love getting to talk about a lot of different stuff here, not only just macro coffee trends, but also how you guys are, you know, how you've evolved and what the future looks like and brand and everything. Want to finish up with segment I always end on, which is my Mount Rushmore segment, where I ask my guests to give me their top four. It would be on your Mount Rushmore of different things. And for you, I figure there's no better question than give me your Mount Rushmore, your top four coffee cities in the world.
Oof, that's a good one. So one I'd say right now is Dubai. Mm. Their coffee scene is ahead of ours by probably 5 years, if not a decade.
Interesting. It will, wait, when you say that, what do you mean?
So there's, so generally the population, like there's a lot of Muslims, so they don't drink. A lot of them don't drink.
Right.
So they go to coffee shops.
Right.
Right. So it forced the entire industry to do such an elevated experience at every single coffee shop you go to. Not only from the coffee shop aesthetics and ambiance, but like there's a ton of roasters. Like I went to the World of Coffee Expo there and it was incredible because at the expo, there were more non-industry people, people that don't work in industry, than industry people there asking questions about the coffee, asking questions about what, like the roasting, the roast, they were on Roasters Village trying to all the roasts. There was the Roasters Village there was double the size of the Roasters Village at the biggest coffee expo, which was just here in Chicago last week. So that's why I'm saying that, like that, they're way ahead of like there. And I would say that region in general, I'd say is the coffee is incredible, but Dubai specifically. Two, I'd say Tokyo, Japan. Hmm. Their coffee, like their coffee scene.
Yeah, that's not a very Tokyo. You don't think of Japan a lot of times with coffee, definitely, but not coffee.
Yeah, yeah, their coffee is incredible. Where else? I'd say probably Seoul, Korea. For similar reasons, right? Like Asians take their that side of the world, the Asian market there takes coffee very, very seriously, and the stuff they do there is very, very cool. And fourth, I mean, more stateside, I would say, I probably, like, if you asked me 5 years ago, I would have said like Seattle or Portland. Sure. But now I'm probably saying LA and LA, greater LA area. The stuff happening there, like Verve Coffee just won the Roaster of the Year, I think, for, I think it was 23 and 24 or one of them. But also a lot of other brands like the Boy and the Bear, like in SoCal, like the brands there are just doing some really cool stuff. And I think they're getting ahead of everybody else in the US. So, I mean, if I want to add a fifth head, it would be Dallas, just for obvious reasons.
There we go. But, yeah. Because you guys,
those are the four heads. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Wow. That's a great, and I love asking that question because usually we find some different answers than a lot of people would think about. And so I'm glad you hit on those four. It's a really cool mix of cities there in a lot of different ways. And so thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Where can everybody find you? Not only Pax and Beneficia, but if they've got questions about Barista GPT, where should everybody go to get in touch with you?
So I'm on Twitter, Instagram, my name, MOUYYADA on Twitter and Instagram. Also BaristaGPT.com, PaxandBeneficia.com. I'm on LinkedIn too. Love to connect.
Awesome. Thank you so much again for your time today. I appreciate it. We'll look forward to having you on when you figure out whatever the next avenue that you guys are going to conquer is and grow different markets or something like that. But thank you again so much. I appreciate it. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. Talk to you soon.